Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to News Talk 830 WCCO Radio. This is Tim Pawlenty filling in for Chad Hartman on this Minnesota Friday afternoon. I hope you're able to get out a little early today and enjoy what's left of this very wonderful day. We're going to have a really good, although a little hot weekend coming up as well. So we're joined now by Jim Schultz. He's the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council. You probably haven't heard of this group, but it's a group that is dedicated to sort of studying and advancing a positive business and job environment in Minnesota. Jim has been at the helm there for a few years and is growing it immensely. But I, as I said before the break, as you think about the quality of life in our state, there's a lot of components to it. But for most people, the ability to have access to a good paying job, hopefully with a good company, or to start a company and be an entrepreneur, is a main pathway for how people can have economic stability and hopefully success and support their family and have a good life. And so this is an important topic. It's just one factor of many, but it's a really important topic. And Jim Schultz, we're glad that you're joining us today on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio.
Well, thank you, Governor. It's so great to be on with you again.
Terrific. Well, I know Minnesota has had a lot of success in a lot of measurements, but one area that is quite controversial for our state is sort of the current state of our business climate. And I know it's different in different parts of the state, but can you just give us sort of to start a high level summary or overview of where the business climate in Minnesota sits and job climate today?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, so Minnesota, a lot of Minnesotans know that historically Minnesota's economy has performed really well compared to the rest of the country. We've been kind of a good job growth state, a good GDP growth state. I think it's fair to say that over the past several years, Minnesota's fallen behind relative to other states. There's a number of different metrics you can look at there. You know, when you look at job growth, for example, since 2018, Minnesota's jobs have grown by about 2.8% compared to 7% nationally. So job growth falling behind. You might say, well, Jim, job growth isn't the only thing. What about GDP? You know, historically our GDP has been, you know, at least consistent with nationwide growth, or maybe a little bit above. Over the past several years, our GDP has been slower. Our GDP growth has been slower than other than the national average. For the first time in our state's history, our GDP per capita, kind of the amount that each individual person is contributing, has now become below average. So if you look at it, basically almost every economic data point, with one asterisk I'll get to in a moment, Minnesota's falling behind, I think you guys say. One positive is that we've got a very low unemployment rate. And I think probably that's a positive, but I think it's driven substantially by the fact that we've got, you know, baby boomers retiring and a fair amount of net out migration out of the state, with people leaving the state. So it's kind of a mixed bag, but when you talk about the low unemployment rate, it's driven by some not so great factors.
And I should mention, Jim, you know, and by the way, Jim Schultz joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline, as all of our News Talk 830 WCCO guests do. You're like a sort of like a chamber of commerce, but you're not the big companies that are with the Minnesota Business Partnership Group. You're not the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, but you sort of represent a subgroup of companies and employers who are mostly privately held. They're not publicly traded, and they're not the smallest, but they're certainly not the biggest companies in Minnesota. Overall, they tend to be sort of mid-sized companies or enterprises. Is that right?
That's right. I'd say our kind of typical company is maybe 50 to 300 employees, meaningfully sized. A lot of our job creation in the state is is headquartered in businesses of that size, and we see a lot of the effects of, you know, Minnesota tax policy, Minnesota regulatory policy, and otherwise.
And so when you talk to these folks every day, these are folks who have started businesses, grown businesses, are trying to provide jobs. And I used to say, and still say, if you want to find out how to improve the business climate, you should ask the people who start and grow businesses, because they're the ones who understand the barriers. So when you talk to your members and interact with them, and they identify for you their frustrations about starting or growing a business in Minnesota, what are the things you most commonly hear as a complaint or concern?
Yeah, Tim, that's a really good question. I think you hear a few things. Number one, you hear the tax burden in the state. We've got the second highest corporate tax burden, and then we've got the kind of sixth highest aggregate tax burden in the country. So a lot of business owners, they look around and they say, you know, I could go to Iowa, have a dramatically lower tax rate. I could go to Texas. I could go to South Dakota. And when they're making decisions in terms of where to invest, whether they're moving their business or building another facility or you name it, it becomes, you know, kind of can become tax advantageous to go elsewhere. So a lot of our businesses are concerned about the tax burden, some of which have increased in recent years. You also hear, and you increasingly hear it, just the aggregate regulatory burden. You know, a lot of these guys and women who are running their businesses, you know, they don't want to do anything wrong. They don't want to harm the environment or anything, but they find it increasingly difficult to get through kind of the regulatory morass that is the Minnesota regulatory climate. You see it in really big projects when it comes to these big projects like data centers and things like that, where the permitting process takes prohibitively long to actually accomplish anything. And you see it in smaller areas where, you know, just getting the permit to do kind of the day-to-day work of their business to manage labor challenges, things along those lines, is just really, really challenging. And some of them operate in other states where it is just, you know, kind of the red carpet is rolled out to help them achieve their business goals. And so it becomes harder. I was just down with one of our member businesses down in Jackson, Minnesota, and, you know, they could move 10 miles south to Iowa and, you know, and reduce their corporate taxes by two-thirds. And it becomes hard to make the case for staying in Minnesota when there is such a delta between the two experiences.
We're talking to Jim Schultz, who's the leader of the Minnesota Private Business Council, about Minnesota's job and business climate. Jim, a couple other quick things, and we'll take a break and have you come back after the break, too. But there's other studies, and I think our friends on the Democratic side of this discussion would say, yes, we understand what Jim is saying. But when you look at things like CNBC studies and certain other studies where they look not just at tax issues, but a broader measurement of what those organizations call the business climate, sometimes Minnesota looks better on those. And how do you respond to that? That sometimes we're higher, sometimes we're lower, depending on what survey you look at.
Well, it's important to note that, you know, it's not just, you know, just an incredibly terrible environment here. We do have some things going for us. We've got a really highly skilled workforce, a really productive workforce. We've got other positive things, you know, a good upper education system, things along those lines. I think, and some of those qualitative factors are factored in. That CNBC study that a lot of people cite also factors in a lot of just like social policy and things along those lines that tend to make, you know, just nationwide Democrat-run states look better. I think most business owners would say, you know, it's vastly more important, you know, the tax burdens, the regulatory burdens are vastly more important than, for example, the nature of, you know, given, you know, social policies in the state. And so I think a lot of people, including myself, would say that those other studies simply aren't representative of the actual business climate of individual states.
Sure. And then I think, Jim, one other topic before break is the workforce. You mentioned it. There's a volume issue, which is, do you have enough just in terms of supply? But then there's also a readiness issue, which is, does our educational system, both at the K-12 level and higher educational level, provide the skills and training to these young men and women who are entering the workforce to give them an opportunity, but also meet the demands of the companies in our state? And our educational system is got some problems. I mean, we have most of our children not being proficient in reading, math, and science at grade level. And so do your employers, do your members express concern about the quality of the workforce in addition to the availability of it by volume?
I think over the past, it's a really good point, Tim. I think over the past 5 years, really since COVID in particular, people have become really concerned about our education system. Now, it's important to note we've got many just, you know, incredible teachers all around the state, but I think people are concerned about just the overall educational system, the incentives created, things along those lines, and the fact that, as you point out, half of all kids at at various grade levels can't read and do math at grade level. And so when you talk about workforce readiness, things along those lines, we have had seen a significant decline, both from where Minnesota used to perform and also compared to other states, such that we're simply not educating our kids. We're not delivering our kids with the resources to succeed in the economic climate of today. And our business owners do bring that up. It is really a challenge to bring people on who can't read and do math at grade level.
Okay, we're going to take a short break on WCCO News Talk Radio 830. We'll be right back with Jim Schultz, who's the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to News Talk 830 WCCO Radio. We love hearing from our texters, especially the ones that make thoughtful comments and don't swear at me, so I appreciate that. And we're talking to Jim Schultz, who's the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council, who really focuses on trying to get pro-business, pro-jobs policy in Minnesota. Jim, one of the texters, I think, is saying, basically taxes aren't the only thing. You got to have a state that is humane. You got to be able to support people, and that takes revenues. And I think, you would say, and you can just comment on it, it's a balance, right? You can't be, we're not going to be a state where we gut social services and those kinds of support systems, but we also can't be so expensive that you drive business growth and job growth out of the state. Is that how you view it?
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think it's really important. We absolutely have to ensure we have got a social safety net, that people who need it are taken care of. But I think what a lot of people would argue, what I would argue, is that we've lost that balance here, particularly in recent years. In the 2023 legislative session, for example, we increased the state budget by 38% in a given legislative session, and spending on a variety of priorities, some of which were the social welfare stuff and so forth. And Minnesota's, for a long time had a really generous social safety net. And the idea that we need to dramatically expand it now, as we did in 23 and thereafter, and have for some years, I think a lot of us would argue that we've lost that balance, such that the tax burden on individual businesses, on families, is just not bearable anymore. I mean, there's other states, some of our neighbors, others that maintain a robust social safety net, but don't have the tax burden that we have, and don't do some of the things that we do. And so I think it's really important to note that nobody's talking about making Minnesota into Texas or to Alabama or something, but I do think we do need to be more attentive to the incredible growth of our state budget that is really increasing the tax burden on Minnesotans.
I think that's a good summary, because if you look at Minnesota and you just ask, where are we aberrational, ahead or behind national measurements, you'd be hard pressed to say Minnesota on the social service side doesn't spend enough money. Per capita, we're one of the highest spending states in the country. But you can mathematically show that we also, though, are on the very top of the range on taxes as well. And so if you look at where is the imbalance in this effort of trying to balance it, you kind of look to taxes, I think, fairly so. And those are great points. So jumping back to education for a minute, one of the people texted in saying, do the concerns about education factor in the impact of immigration on our educational system? And the texter is saying or implying that the test scores are dragged down by people who are new arrivals. They may not yet be fully up to speed on speaking English, may not be able to learn as quickly or as well as folks who, have been here since birth. How do you respond to a concern like that, that we're not, adjusting educational scores based on new arrivals to our country who are not up to speed educationally?
Yeah, it's a very good point. We do have we're a very welcoming state to first generation immigrants, and we do have a meaningful immigrant presence in the state here. I'd say a couple things. Even if you look at communities with relatively low new immigrant levels, you know, we still have very low proficiency in many school districts, and some of which are, you know, are 20%, 30%, some of which are, you know, 40%, 50%. But the but even in communities, you get outside of the Twin Cities and into some areas that are not do not have high levels of new immigrants. We still see that underperformance. You could also look at other states that have similar levels of new immigrants, and we're underperforming relative to them as well. And so I think it's a worthwhile point, but I don't think it does explain the real significant decline in our performance. And if you look at it, you know, from I think 2013, I think roughly 65% of all students were proficient in math and reading. And at that time, we of course had an immense new immigrant presence then as well. And so we're at comparable levels now and dramatic educational decline.
Yeah, and it's time for a Lindus construction time check. It's time to protect your home with dog-free LeafGuard brand gutters from Lindus Construction. The time is 2:52.
Dog-free and clog-free.
Oh, it says, clog-free.
But there's also no dogs in
there. I also have my reading glasses on, and it doesn't say dog. It says clog, and I misread it. Dave. I can't believe I did that.
I can.
By the way, I do have leaf filter gutter guards on my house in Egan and at Arcata.
Are there dogs?
They're fantastic. And there's no dogs in the gutters.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. All right. Back to Jim Schultz. Jim, we're going to let you go in a minute here. But as you think about these businesses being concerned about the Minnesota climate and moving elsewhere, one of the texters asks, you know, obviously they go to lower cost states sometimes, but are there instances where they go somewhere that's not necessarily low cost? It's not just Alabama or Texas or something. You know, are we losing jobs and business opportunities, investment to states that you'd consider still high quality of life states? I guess that's the question.
You know, you see that occasionally, but I have to say it's pretty unusual. You know, where you see a business, you know, kind of move from from Minnesota to a California or a Washington state, or kind of a state that has a comparable level of kind of regulatory burden, but maybe a robust, robustly sized government and so forth. So you see it occasionally, the vast majority of the shifts we've seen, both from Minnesota and just nationally, is from states like with a really heavy tax and regulatory burden, down to a state like Tennessee or South Carolina or Texas or Iowa or South Dakota that are doing some things that to reduce their tax burdens, to make it doable to add jobs, to build a business and otherwise. And so, broadly, that's the shift we're seeing.
Gotcha. Well, Jim, we appreciate you bringing your insights and your expertise to the WCCO listeners. And we hope that you have a great rest of your day and a wonderful weekend. Thanks for joining the show today.
Thank you, Tim. Great to be on with you.
All right. That's Jim Schultz. He's the head of the Minnesota Private Business Council. We're joined now also by somebody very special, the one and only Jason DeRusha, who...
Dog-free. I'm clog-free.
You are.
Relatively.
Well, speaking of which, are you regular? I mean, do you consider yourself at this advanced age regular?
Yeah. No, fair question. I definitely, once you hit 50,
yeah,
the wake-ups in the middle of the night,
yeah,
they start creeping up, and I get a little nervous about it, is this a new way of life?
This is personal, but I know you are a foodie. You go out, eat at great restaurants.
You asked if I was regular.
You ate great food.
Yeah.
And you probably go to bed after having eaten late and heavy a lot.
Happens,
and so do you correlate your heavy meal, late eating meals, with your sleep quality?
I think the drinking certainly has an impact on sleep quality. I've found I was reading some research today that said your quality of sleep and the is more correlated to the time you go to sleep.
Yes,
which I thought was very interesting. I have noticed now that the kids are gone, we go to bed usually between 10 and 10:30, a little earlier. Mm-hmm. Used to go to bed more 11. Well, of course, back in the morning news days, I was going to bed at 8 o'clock in the night. But yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I think I read that same article, but I clearly read it more carefully than you did.
Clearly.
And how I understood the article was this.
I'm a typical talk radio host.
That people...
Headlines only.
Headlines. Hot takes. Let's go.
People think, you eat a big breakfast, medium lunch, and a light dinner.
Oh, right. Right.
But this article said it depends on whether you're a morning person or a night person. And the essence of it was, if you are a morning person, eat the big breakfast, eat the medium lunch, eat the light dinner. But if you're a night owl, if you get going, you know, later in the afternoon and the evening, then do it in the reverse. Eat the light breakfast, medium, and the big big dinner, depending on your when you get your energy going.
Last night, I probably ate around 8 o'clock at night. So a little late, a little later than normal. This weekend, I'm going to the soft opening of Chi-Chi's.
What?
You know, the world reinvigoration of Chi-Chi's.
The one and only?
Yeah, it's back. St. Louis Park.
Chi-Chi's. I spent a lot of my youth at the Chi-Chi's in Bloomington and the adjoining nightclub called Maximilian's.
It's back.
Oh, my God.
It's back.
That brings, I got PTSD. What's going to be on your show?
You want to come? You want to come? Let's go.
What's your show going to feature today?
It's just going to be nonstop, like people talking about how crappy this state is. We're starting with optimism versus pessimism. That's where we're starting.
I love it. All right. That's Jason Derusha. He's going to be on in just a few minutes. Thanks for joining us today on News Talk WCCO 830.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.